And welcome to another episode of Honest to a Malt. Myself, Dunkin' Donuts, Mike, aka Tupids, and this week's special guest, Soren Krebs from the English Whiskey Company.
Hi, how are you doing?
Yeah, good man. Thanks so much for coming on. Appreciate it.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me.
We've started slightly earlier than usual because Soren is up at the crack of dawn most days.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the gym, right? And you lift heavy weights.
Yes, that's what I tell most people, but actually it's just to go to work.
Oh, you go to work. Okay, yeah. You're not up doing like The Rock. You haven't got a private chef like cooking like special cod meals for you and then you're off your first gym session of the day.
No. I mean, you know, to get a body like this, it's a lot of hard work. But I used to on the farm, so.
Work that sofa.
I love it.
So thanks for coming on. Mike, what's the name of the episode today?
So we are episode 51 and the title is Road Tripping English Whiskey.
Beautiful.
Very simple. I remembered it this week as well. I did write it down, but yeah.
What was it last week that got you so out of kilter?
I don't know. I think I was giggling on the way in. I completely forgot the episode title and just, yeah, it was one of those.
So unprofessional.
Standard.
Is what it is. So, Soren, would it be okay just to give yourself a bit of an introduction? I mean, we've both met you, I'm sure, several times over the last few years. It'd be nice just to explain your role and what you do, and also how long you've been working in the world of whiskey, right?
Yeah. So my name's Soren. I am currently the brand ambassador for the English Whiskey Company. It's my job to basically do the festivals and some tastings and things like this, and hopefully spread the good word and tell everybody how great English whiskey is. Kind of been into whiskey all my life. I don't remember a legal time when I drunk anything other than really whiskey. I used to be into lager and things like that and got into a few scrapes with it, so kind of went to whiskey and started to blog about it. I was blogging for about 4 or 5 years under OCD Whiskey. That kind of led more into doing the festivals, which I always attended as a punter. And like so many people, got a little bit poorly, ended up on a couch once or twice, and kind of thought maybe it's time not to drink quite so much and put my passion more into talking to people.
Focus on quality as well, right?
Yeah. And so there I spoke to Shilton, who was working with Paul John at the time, and asked him if I could volunteer with him, helping him out on one or two festivals. And he kindly said yes and got me in at York, which is my local festival. And I did sort of about 18 months with Paul John and then went to Boutique. Worked along with Dave from Boutique for, again, probably about 18 months. Little stints in with Diageo, with Colin Dunn, and Lockman with Ibben. And then got talking to Mike one day, because I'd seen their stand was empty and nobody had turned up to do it, and said, would you like somebody to do it for you?
Yeah.
And he kind of said, yeah, we'll get talking. And 6 months after the initial talk started, I went down to the distillery on the Tuesday, and on the Wednesday, the country went into lockdown with COVID.
Oh, right. Okay.
So it's your fault.
It's fairly recent then that you started that role.
Yeah, I think we're coming up to about 4 years now. So,
God, has it been that long since lockdown stuff?
Yeah.
Goodness me.
I mean, when you consider sort of 18 months, 2 years nearly we're in lockdown. So it was my role to sort of do the online tastings and things like
that. Yeah, the virtual stuff.
We set up a little whiskey community on Twitter and called the Whiskey Circus, which was initially supposedly about 10 of us and sort of grew to about 200 almost all around the world. We bottled a few casks. Still sort of chat. There's still quite a bit of a group of us chatting, but yeah, it's all whiskey. Out of all this sort of came a little mini collection as well.
I have to say, your backdrop, that's your whiskey room.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, it looks pretty top drawer there. Love
it. Yeah, it's... I mean,
maybe Mike could get a screenshot or something.
Oh,
look
nice.
At that. It's got two recliners.
Let me grab
looks like it's out
photo.
Some sort of 40s movie. giant casks,
right. Big cheesy grin,
loads of shelves.
Love it.
Loads of shelves. Yeah, really. Just that's a quality whiskey room there.
There's actually another room as well, just through there.
Ooh, second whiskey room.
That's where
all the. Fuck, I'm jealous now.
Do you ever? I was just thinking, like, I wonder if anyone's done, like, you know, when like you're in movies and have like an escape room or that, like, that room that they go into, safe room, not escape room. Safe, yeah. What am I talking about? Safe room. I wonder if one's like. Gone. They've got their safe room designed with whiskey in it, right?
You went down the line of safe word for a second, then didn't you? Your mind went. Wandering.
Where have I been the last few days? Yeah. Anyway, yeah. You're also a big fan of bourbon.
When I first drinking whiskey, I tried a few bourbons and I just couldn't get into it. It was either too sweet or just wasn't to my palate. And over the last sort of 3 or 4 years, well, 2-3 years probably. I've kind of tried to expand my drinking to understand all about the flavors within whiskey and try, you know, the initial sort of cask influences with bourbon, with sherries, with wines. And I've kind of got a love now for bourbon. And
yeah, me too.
Really started to get into it as much as I am my whiskey. But it's like the whiskey, you know, we all start and we try the supermarket whiskeys and teach us. You know, and the blends.
Yeah, so you go in with the same with the bourbon, don't you? You go in with the Buffalo Trace and...
Yeah, and until you sort of move up the line a little bit, you don't understand how complex bourbon can be, same as whiskey. And, you know...
Same as whiskey. I know exactly what you're saying, but there are quite a few people that still turn their noses up at it. But I think there's room for all. I don't see why there's room to have, you know, good scotch in the cabinet, good bourbon, good English whiskey.
Yeah.
I don't see the issue.
I harp on about Knob Creek, which was a readily available bourbon. And I just always remember seeing it in bars and it was for shooting and everything else. And again, when I first tasted it, I was like, oh, that's all right. But then you go back to that exact same bottle once you're a bit more in tune with bourbon and you're like, oh, this is brilliant stuff. Like, how was I treating it so badly previously? Yeah, it's just really, really decent.
I think the takeaway really is just quality made whiskey. Or bourbon. I don't know if I'm that hot on rye, but quality made whiskey and bourbon particularly, it's just that. It's about the quality.
Yeah,
it's well made, bit of a better age statement if it's been managed really well. And it doesn't have to be, you know, like a 10-year bourbon's got a lot more going on in it than like a 3-year-old has, obviously, hasn't it? It's the same thing. Before we say that, you're based up north, is that right?
I'm in Yorkshire, South Yorkshire.
Okay.
Hence the accent.
Well, you can. You are allowed to move out of Yorkshire. Has anyone told you that? You can leave.
No, definitely not. No.
Okay.
No.
Is there a local mayor or something? Do they come and stop you on the border?
Yeah.
Probably is a local mayor, but don't ask me who it is.
Anyway, so let's do what's been in your glass and what's been up your ass. And it'd be nice to start with yourself this week, Soren. So what's been in your glass the last few days? And what have you got in your glass now? And what's been up your ass?
In the glass, I mean, how could I go any further than the world's best whiskey, which just...
Plug.
He's drunk. Cling.
Which just happens to be the English whiskey company's very own sherry cask matured. Absolutely unbelievable. You get told that you've won world's best, and
probably from one of the two biggest awards, I think. In the world of whiskey,
it's not a tin pot token one, is it? It's as good as you can get, kind of thing. So
it was the year before it was Milk and Honey, and then I think before that it was like the Glenallachie
and Lakes.
Batch strength, yeah. Lakes batch 5, wasn't it? Or Lakes batch 4? Lakes batch 4, yeah.
What makes it more special is the fact so many people tell us that the English can't make whiskey. Well, that's two best whiskeys in the world within the last 3-4 years. So
I mean, the I've only tried the sherry cask one in the purple box, right?
Yeah,
in the purple label, purple box. I've tried it. I haven't had a bottle of it yet, but I've tried it a few times, whether it's a festival or wherever. And I really liked it at the time. But when you're out and you're trying lots of whiskey, it's hard to really really get a read on something. You need to sort of sit with it at home or just sit with it out, but just have that one drink and really get to know it. It's definitely a boost, right, for the distillery to win that. And to be fair, the Lakes batch 4 or whatever, Was it which one was the Reserve? Whiskey Makers Reserve, that's it. They're really decent.
Yeah.
The Milk and Honey from last year, we tried it. We liked it. There was one note in it we weren't that keen on, the lemon sif note. Otherwise, it was fairly solid whiskey, right? So we'll, at some point, we'll get hold of a bottle and we'll try it. But we haven't got any to try today, I don't think. And actually, Soren agreed to come on fairly short notice to come and join us as part of this road trip.
Save the day.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not, you know, the guys aren't tight or anything like that. We didn't have time, didn't ask for anything. And actually, I have to say, I haven't got any English whiskey in the house currently. And the part of the reason for that is because whenever I buy a bottle, we smash through it.
Yeah.
And then it's gone. And then when I drive past the distillery, I go and get something else. That's because you don't drink them, Mike.
I got
you just
two.
Look at them on a shelf.
I know. I don't drink them because I'm holding up an old boutique one. And I think this was batch one of the English whiskey from boutique.
Yeah.
Still really, really nice. And it was one of those ones I think I paid a fair, well, what seemed at the time like quite a lot of money. So I was nursing it.
It was boutique-y, probably, yeah. You got to pay for that beard oil for Dave. So you got to keep him in beard oil. It's a bit the same with Shilton. Shilton, you got to keep him in bracelets and necklaces and everything else. So what do you find? You know, how do you find this sherry cask? And what's the official name of it again?
So it's the Sherry Cask Matured.
That's it, Sherry Cask Matured. There's no age statement on it, though. So it's a NAS,
no
right?
No age statement on it. So
I love their NAS stuff these days at the World Whiskey Awards.
It's one of these things that, to me, an age statement's no longer important. If the whiskey's ready.
Doesn't seem to be.
And the reason there's no age statement on it is because it's actually part of our core range. So it's always going to be available, which is a rarity for the world's best as well. You know, generally it's a small batch or a single cask. So, you know, this is always going to be about. And the nice thing about this one is it's actually matured in our own Pedro Jimenez liqueur casks. So,
yeah. And that Pedro Jimenez liqueur that you do is ridiculously tasty.
It's fantastic.
This,
you know, this has been, I mean, this whiskey is sort of between that 6 and 7 year old mark.
Okay.
And it's obviously been in the process of thought about for sort of 7, 8 years and come about only last year. I think, was it June, July we released it? No, it was.
So is it fully matured in, so basically you make your own, did it make your own?
We buy the Pedro in it when it's freshly made. And
okay, so you buy it freshly made. Where do you have to say where you buy it from?
Secret,
top level, high security stuff. So you buy the Pedro Jimenez.
Yeah.
Pedro Jimenez. You got it. Puss in Boots.
You buy in the special sherry, the red fruits sherry.
Yeah.
It's super secret, comes in.
Super
then,
secret.
Then you put it into your... oak cast, and are they made on site? Are they made elsewhere?
No. We buy, so all our bourbon type casks, so virgin oak bourbon size barrels, they all come from what would go to Jim Beam. So everything, and then we buy in our sherry casks from obviously Europe, European oak, and these casks have all been sort of barrels and hoggies. So they're not butts, fully matured in those Pedro Jimenez. And the nice thing about it is because it's slightly watered down with whiskey, it's the best way to water something down in it with whiskey, it's around that 20-22% when it goes into casks. So it kind of works a little bit differently from general Pedro Jimenez because Pedro doesn't always seep straight into the wood.
It's that slightly higher strength.
Yeah.
Right? That liqueur thing that you make, right? So that's the difference. It's not just the Pedro Jimenez. It's the Pedro Jimenez. It has a bit of whiskey in there. It's the liqueur type thing that you make, which is majority Pedro Jimenez. Now, in case I forget to say it, it's a very soft spot for that drink because that was one of the favourite drinks of my wife's late mother. We used to go into the distillery and buy it for her, and she absolutely adored it. And there's still a bottle in the cupboard that she didn't manage to finish. It's unopened. I'm not sure we'll ever get opened now.
No.
But so you've got this thing where you're using a special liqueur, the Pedro Jimenez liqueur with the whiskey in it, and then is it fully matured once that's been taken out for the 6-7 years?
Yeah,
well, that's where you're getting all the powerful flavour from, then, isn't it?
Yeah, right? New mate goes in and stays there until we deem it ready. I mean, the beauty of it is it's something that we've planned and you know the. The people that set it up, James and his son Andrew, it was always the aim to produce fantastic whiskey. Whether they ever thought we'd win world's best is another matter. But you know, this is the, you know, the dream what they had in the beginning, and
yeah,
this whiskey to come out like this and to be so good. I mean, the beauty of it is it's one of those strange ones that when it first came out and I first started trying it, and obviously have to do my research on learning the whiskies. It was one of those that you always felt it was good, but it was always good because it was kind of faultless. It wasn't that it was wow factor.
You worry sometimes when it's too smooth and easy to drink, right? Yeah, that's the problem.
That's the thing. And
yeah,
that's why you never sort of envisage.
That's 100% like the Redbreast Tawny Port edition.
Exactly.
It's almost too easy to drink, too good. And so you're sipping it and going, it's just too easy. It's plums and chocolate.
Yeah.
But that's how well made it is. Right?
Yeah.
You know, recently, sir, and we did this, you know, on the Blind Drams, we've talked about this a few times, but just to sort of name check it one more time, on the Blind Drams, you know, the top scoring out of all time, how many has there been, Mike? Like over 40 or something now, right?
Yeah.
So 40 times five sets of drams.
42 or something.
Blind, fully blind. Budget's decent. You know that, sir, and it's like 75, 80 quid a bottle. So you could be buying anything pretty much. And the best score of all time was 5 5-year-old whiskies.
Yeah.
And, you know, that sort of changed our view on whiskey and the notion that basically if you're drinking it in a shorter period of time, if you're not going to sit and know, how many people sit and know something for an hour, honestly? I mean, not really, right? You maybe occasionally, you're just getting into it.
It makes for a good tale when you're doing tasting notes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But that's where these sort of 6 7 8-year-old whiskies, you know, 5 6 7 8-year-old whiskies are coming in where they're full maturation, right? Look at the hype, the justified hype recently about some of the releases that are coming out of Glasgow Whiskey Distillery, whether it's 3 years and 3 years or it's full maturation for all 5 or 6 years. There's all this young whiskey now that's doing really well. So what tasting notes do you find in the world's best single malt whiskey?
Well, obviously only the finest notes.
If you're going to sit and nose it for an hour.
What is the finest note? Maybe like a nice A minor chord.
We'll just sit in silence for an hour.
A minor.
And let you sniff it.
D. Look, C.
It's got the finest Madagascan vanilla notes, obviously.
Finest Madagascan vanilla.
On a serious note, I find it's a very, very typical Pedro. You get those dates, you get those plum notes, you get the chocolate, you get the nuttiness. Which is, the nuttiness is kind of more that you would expect from Oloroso, but I do find it in this. It's quite a strange one, but it's the chocolate notes for me that stand out, and the plum, and that, you know, when you get those, don't want to say cheap Turkish delight, but cheap Turkish delight with the chocolate and, you know,
the best Turkish delight.
Yeah.
The fries.
Fries. That's the one. Definitely.
Yeah, there you go.
I get that in this, and What is strange with this whiskey for me is you do get some of those bourbony type notes, like your vanillas and things like that, which to say it's fully matured in Pedro kind of seems strange to sort of say that. But, you know, I'm sipping this now, and I'm picking that vanilla note up. I'm picking those cherries and things like that. It's just, but the very good thing about it is it's not all about sherry. Even though it's fully matured in sherry, it's not just a great big thick gloopy sherry type whiskey.
And it comes in at 46%, right?
46%, all natural colour, all non-chill filtered.
Yeah, so I look forward to trying it again.
And sold out online. I'm assuming that's happened this week.
Can you pick it up at the distillery still? Because I'll just pick up a bottle when I go to
Basically,
Norwich.
What happened was a lot of the big shops hadn't actually taken allocation of it. So there is a lot actually sat waiting to go into shops. Just for some reason is still with our distributor.
It'll get there and it'll get sold.
It will get Purple's, there.
Purple's a good choice as well because it feels, it works, I think, for the whiskey in the box.
With the flavour.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. So predominantly you're saying it's chocolate, it's cherry, it's vanilla, Madagascan vanilla.
Madagascan vanilla, yeah.
It's those types of key flavour and the kind of cheap fries, Turkish delight type note.
Nice.
Yeah, cool.
Plums, you know, dates, sultanas. It's all the very typical notes that you want from a sherry whiskey.
I'm going to level with you. It sounds like and I have tried it, definitely. And I tried it, I thought it was really nice.
You tried it at Kendall.
Yeah, well, I've tried it a couple of times. I definitely tried it at Kendall, remember that? Because you also had that Virgin Oak on the stand.
Yeah.
But it sounds to me like a really great replacement for the Redbreast Tawny Port that I'm about to smash. Now, that Redbreast Tawny Port, it's Tawny Port, but yet has very similar flavour profile. Yeah. So yeah. It just goes to show, you know, this cask management and things. You can never 100% tell. You can have a good idea of where you're going to steer it, but you don't know exactly, do you? Like you said, there's more vanilla in this than you would have expected, right?
Yeah. And like you say, the beauty of this is when you open it, say compared to your 24 Redbreast or a Glendronach, something like that, that's a big, heavy hitting sherry. This comes across as very easy drinking sherried whiskey. That's the nice thing about it. It's not one of those whiskies, like we say, you know, you want to sit there for an hour, 2 hours and nose it. You want to drink this. That's the beauty of it. It is a drinking sherried whiskey.
And there's a lot of people that don't want that Glendronach hit of everything. No, they just want an accessible, sweeter sort of view on it, or fruity.
I mean, I am a big sherry fan. I love the sherried whiskies, and the deeper, the oakier, the older, the mustier, the better for me. But that's because I want that enjoyment of nosing it and drinking it at the same time. Whereas this is drinker's whiskey. That's the difference.
Like it.
Nice. So has anything been up your arse in the last week? Has anything been getting on your nerves?
Not so much in the last week, but certainly sort of this year, latter end of last year, the weather. All the rain. You know, I mean, as a farmer, it's killing us. Every time you look out the window, there's rain. You know, you're wanting to get your crops in, there's rain.
Yeah.
You drive over and get ploughing or doing something on the land. It's you're sinking in the soil.
What kind of stuff have you got on the farm then?
Everything. So we've got 900 sows, 2,500 acres, 46,000 chickens.
46,000 chickens
laying eggs.
Did you do a count today? I mean,
that's how many came in.
That's like my order at McDonald's nuggets.
Yeah, I'll have 46,000 nuggets. Yeah. 46,000.
I mean, the beautiful thing about this, you know, when it is raining, it does make you want to sit inside and have a log fire and a whiskey. So,
yeah, I bet. Are you growing any malted barley anywhere on the farm?
We don't do malted barley. We do barley, but yeah, all our barley goes for animal feed.
I thought that was going to be the next special release.
No, we. I keep talking to the boss and sort of saying to him, you know, do you fancy doing a bit of malted barley? Let's get a little still put up in the shed somewhere. But he's not having any of it.
Oh well, I mean, hopefully the weather picks up for you then. I mean, it's been pretty shocking so far this year in terms of like just swinging around all over the place. It's like 40 plus miles an hour here, and all the blossoms blown off the trees already. It's just such a shame because it's like sunny, and then the wind comes in, it blows all the blossom off, and then you only had it for like a couple of days. And it's so beautiful when the blossom comes out, and then boom, it's gone because it's gone. You know, some freak wind came.
You've literally taken my point, what I was going to make, of what's been up my arse.
What, blossom?
No, crap wind. TV show. Wind. So I'll dive straight into what's been up my arse because it ties in so well. So lovely day this weekend. Got the press. Well, heard the neighbour. Two down, pressure washing.
Right.
And Lara just went,
That's your cue.
Out you go. By the time I get out there, the neighbour next door, his missus had done the same. So all three of us are just pressure washing, having a lovely day on the decking. Got it all pristine. I did all the stepping stones in the garden. I was covered, head to toe, just covered in grit, mud, shit, everything else. Looked lovely. That night, last night, Barley goes diving out for his pee in the night, comes back in. And I was like, what's he doing on the decking? I think he was chasing like a mouse I must have like washed out from underneath the decking. Mud everywhere. So there was now muddier than it was when I started. And then to top it all, the wind today has knocked over a load of flower pots and everything else. So I've just got mud everywhere. So
waste of time.
Waste of time.
Never wash your car regularly. Never clean your deck regularly. Washing the outside of your car is a
clean your
waste
what?
Time.
Oh, deck. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
Dick. Don't clean your dick. So not in New Zealand now, Mike. With cars, you clean the inside of them. You hoover, you clean, so it's like hygienic. you forget the outside. Every time you wash it, you're just taking off another layer of paint.
Just protect it.
Clean it like once every 6 months when you're going to a wedding or something. In between, just leave it. Just let the mud accrue. I don't... It's like showboating. And then, you know, it'll get covered in mud again. What a waste of time that was.
Everyone does want to see your Renault Megane, though. That's, I mean, that is a... You want to showboat that.
Renault Megane.
Is that what have you got? Is it a Megane?
I'll take a Megane. It's probably better than what I've got. Switch it up. So what's been in your glass then, Mike, and what are you having a sip of at the moment?
So at the moment, I'm sipping on the Samuel Gulliver & Co. England's number 6, which kills me as a Welsh rugby fan, but it's lovely. It is English whiskey, literally the English whiskey company. I think they've branded it St. George's just to have a bit of difference on there. But yeah, rum casks. I think it's finished in a rum cask. I don't know how long it's been in them. But really decent whiskey. I love the stuff that Stuart Gulliver's puts out. I've talked about it a couple of times on Twitter and things. He's a lovely bloke. And yeah, his partnership with you guys, Soren, has been working wonders, I think. But I'm double poured. I've got, like I said, the original Batch One Boutique English Whiskey Company, 5 years old, peated, both really, really lovely drams. So that's in my glass at the moment. What's been in my glass... Like you, we had a little trip after last week's pod to the SMWS.
Yeah, and, we did.
Had a little nose at...
I'd almost forgotten about that.
It seems ages ago, doesn't it?
It feels like a month ago already.
Sure, I had to hide that hangover the next day. We went for a steak baguette, 5 drams, and we
had... Yeah,
ended
a
up
nice
having,
steak baguette, 5 drams.
We
plus
had
another
lot
4 drams
than that. Yeah.
Plus a rum, plus whatever else. Yeah.
And Lara was like, "You feeling fine this morning?" Yep.
Yeah, absolutely fine.
No dramas. As soon as she walked out of the room, I was like, oh, chewing my fist.
What was your favourite then from that SMWS tasting? By the way, sorry, are you an SMWS member or do you occasionally frequent there? Ever?
No, I've never. So not tasting. I've got a good friend whose father was one of the first 10 members, I think.
Ooh.
He.
Very special.
Fortunately deceased. But his son took over the
ship,
and I frequently get my whiskey through him because he gets a good discount as well. So being a Yorkshireman, obviously, tight as the duck's ass. So.
Save 10p, I'll have it.
You're getting access to the whiskey without the admin fee, basically. We can advocate for that. So we're both foolishly members.
Yes.
So what was your, Mike, what were you thinking on the night?
We got the choice of 5 drams. We had 5 whiskies. No, we didn't. We had 3 scotches, 1 rum, and 1 bourbon. I think from that selection, the rum, hands down, smashed over all the whiskey.
That was
easily.
Like an 18-year-old rum, wasn't it?
It was stunning.
The whiskies we tried were a little bit too on the spicy side, just slightly. One did have a really good nose, though, didn't it? Whichever one that was.
I can't remember which one had the really good nose, if I'm honest.
Was it Ben Rinner's or something?
I did have tasting notes here. What did we score? The rum scored 4. We did blind dram tasting style. So the rum scored a 4 for me. Then we had the few bourbon scored a 3 and the Ben Rinnis scored a 3. So
yeah,
those were the two that were like, yeah.
What
decent.
Was the stuff we tried after? There was something really good that we.
Oh,
what was it we finished with or something? There's a couple
once,
of bits and pieces.
Once you were suitably lubricated up, you started buying drams and we ended up having a 16-year-old Bunner Haben, which I think
was the cinnamon,
salted
the salted cinnamon.
Cinnamon butter, which is. Society cast number
obviously
10,
it's sold out
247 sold out, can't get it anywhere,
but absolutely magic.
I will be hunting auctions.
We also tried
bowl.
We tried a couple of extra Ardmore. There was that Ardmore that had tasting notes of like it's tasted like dead animal and like
did we say that was hog roast and marshmallows to toast?
Nah, that was good, that one. It was the Ardmore
the
in
one?
The original tasting set. It was like F1 barbecue racetrack F1 racetrack barbecue or something like that. It had some of the worst tasting notes I've ever had in a whiskey.
It was pretty
and
Ardmore's
generally pretty
rubbish.
Good. So
F1 racetrack barbecue cask 66245 98 quid. Yeah, no. Just yeah. I think our tasting notes were a bit sort of out there on there. Dead animal, wasn't it?
Well, there's some other couple, not like nondescript dead animal, not like a nice cooked chicken or something. Like,
yeah, roadkill.
There's a few things that were just off in it, really. It was a bit bizarre.
So that, loads of SMWS. What's in your glass and what's been up your ass?
I'm trying a Wireworks to keep it English downward, or, you know, it's I've got downward and upwards, which Brian has sent me, and they're both red wine casks. I know that. I taste it and I was like, it's definitely red wine cask. It tastes slightly perverted. I looked it up and they are. So I don't know if Brian's done that to wind me up. I was just trying. It's all right. It's got a slight vinegary note to it. It's okay. It's not my favourite Wireworks that I've had so far.
No.
What's been in my glass? I bottle killed a Black Friday from Whiskey Exchange.
Glenkinchy?
Yeah, the Glenkinchy's gone. I definitely have another bottle of that. If it comes down in price again to like £65 or £60 or whatever, I'll buy it. At £75, I consider to buy it, but you know, there's so much whiskey in the world. But would I,
so much.
If I happen to have had two bottles, I would be over the moon to have another one in the cupboard. That's absolutely stunning. And I tried that Injury, the cask strength burbs.
Yeah. That's been doing the rounds on socials, yeah. Hasn't it? Everyone's talking about it. What do you reckon?
Well, Andrew sent me a sample. And so thanks so much to Pad Whiskey. I tried that. We did a bit of a sample swap. It's really full on. So you're getting like, you just get hit over the head with like banana and guava.
Oh, nice.
I said, I'm just having a quick look now.
I said
a sledgehammer of a nose. Yeah, mostly overripe banana and guava. Vanilla and honey hide. They are in the background somewhere. The palate gives sourness, like lime, pepper, more banana, some chili heat. Finishes the same, but dialed up. It's for me, this is a bit like when you try these whiskies from these hot countries. Is like Balcones or Balcones?
Balcones.
Balcones. Okay. Oh, you're not winding me up there. Like Balcones, it's similar to if you try like the Balcones single malt.
Yep.
It's similar to if you try like cask strength milk and honey. Basically, you get sledgehammered, you know, beaten around the head with flavor, but the nuances and the delivery is not quite there. It's just like being punched. And if you want that powerful flavor injection, it's great. But I like the balance between flavor and delivery in the whiskey, like how it feels in the mouth. So for me, I liked it for £75. It's similar to, it's the same ballpark as like Balcones single malt. I think it's just, I think it's like a trendy thing. But tropical notes are popular, aren't they? So, I mean, you get tons of banana in Balcones as well and some other stuff.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's similar, right? And what's been up my ass? Gargling salt water. Still haven't shifted this throat thing. And
you sound so much better.
Yeah, I am.
Said this week on week, but you sound normal now.
I am. So you can stop sending money to my GoFundMe page. I no longer need the life-saving surgery or whatever. I've still got a bit of something in my throat. And what's annoying me is I've had to go old school with all the medical stuff in the world. Nothing, the doctor was like, there's nothing we can do for you. Just get over it yourself. And so I've gone back to gargling salt water.
Yep.
I feel like I'm in like the Middle Ages or something. Like, wasn't this what they would do to like cure it themselves in like 1800 or something? Just gargle salt water.
That's my ski trip. Like, if anyone goes skiing, everyone always like drinks too much, gets ill. There's loads of drink sharing and stuff. You always get a sore throat. I always get like sort of like cold, sorey things appearing as you get run down in the week. Gargle salt water every night. It gets rid of everything. And then
as you're gargling it, like
put a bit of salt on any sores on your lips. Gone.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
If you live near the sea, just get in the sea. That's that. Or maybe not now, because of course the sea is just full of human excrement.
Yeah, not the UK. Thames water.
Yeah, Thames water, yeah. So I had a bit of good news. Paul sent me a link to buy, and you'd never find it online, so if you search, so if this pod comes out, you know, even like in the next 5 minutes, you still won't find it.
If you've got some bargain and that.
One of my favourite ever bottles is a Berry Brothers and Rudd Glen Tocker's 1996 21-year-old cask 3978, and someone sent me a link to a bottle, and they bought another two bottles themselves. I say someone, it's Paul. It's Quattro.
Quattro, fire up the Quattro.
Fire up the Quattro.
So he's flying Tocker's.
Yeah, he sent me a link to that, and it's £120. So I have to really think on it. But I can't think on it for too long. And auction wins. I managed to pick up a Tamdu batch strength for £45 and a Glen Scotia seasonal release for, I know, look at Soren's face. Soren's like, ooh. And a Glen Scotia seasonal release 2021 for £50.
What? What auctions? Auctioneer?
I do is I will just wait until like Sunday evening. I'll have a quick check at the start if there's any Ben Nevis or anything I want to chase or any Lejig. And then after that, I just leave the whole auction. And then on the Sunday night, I pour myself a whiskey, and about 9:30, a new player enters the game.
Start sniping.
And I just sort by lowest cost single malt and blend, and I just trawl through and watch this stuff. And then I wait until like when I think the auction's going to end, and I just put a cheeky bid in, and then I just go to sleep. Done. I mean, £45 for Tamdu batch strength. Stick your fees on, £49 50 or whatever.
50, yeah.
£50.
I'm waiting on my auction ones, and you've scared me now, because I think mine were EU bottles.
Yeah,
so
you're going to get
be
hit
facing
with an
import
fee,
a big import fee.
Yeah, big time.
I'm fuming if that's
I'll keep my fingers crossed for you, Mike.
I'll be doing a whole episode on my own, just ranting if that's the case.
So sometimes we do a sort of Dragon's Den thing, but work's been very busy at the moment. But I'm hoping that we'll have you back on in the future, Soren, at some point.
Yeah, if hopefully, yeah.
We'll Dragon's Den you up then. I think you did have a think about putting Island Drams, didn't you?
Yeah, and it's probably the hardest decision I ever have to make.
So before you go into the hardest decision you've ever had to make, that we're going to put on the pod. That's the putting Island Drams, the hardest decision I've ever had to make, Soren Krebs.
Yeah.
Before you go into that, we should explain for people who are listening to it. So Pudding Island Drams is you're going to a deserted island for 30 nights, not staying there forever, because if you stay there forever, God, that would be horrendous. That's like some sort of form of torture. So you get 30 nights there. Whilst you're there, you get to pick a dessert or a pudding, we say pudding, one album to listen to or best of, or if you are Stuart Dick, probably some sort of Instagram reel compilation of Beyonce country music. And big up, Stuart Dick. And then I know,
picking
right?
You up.
He is. And you also pick a whiskey. Of course, this is a whiskey pod. Duh. And then you pick who's going to pick you up and how they're going to pick you up at the end of 30 nights. So also, it's nice to hear a bit about your descriptor of the old deserted island, where it would be and why. So Soren, over to you. Where would you like to start?
We describe the island then. I think my perfect island would be somewhere bloody cold.
Freezing.
With a wood around me, a log cabin, snow, having to chop wood, log, you know, burning fire, and just sit in front of that and eat, drink, and try and be merry.
So sort of like live.
Sounds
in
ideal
the middle
to
of
me.
Finland somewhere, basically, right?
Yeah, just miles away from anybody else. No internet, obviously. No TV. I don't know how I'll survive without my TV, right? But just
watching the stars.
Solitude. Yeah, just solitude. That would be perfect.
I think people pay a lot of money for that these days. So somewhere cold, foresty area.
Yeah,
middle of nowhere. Lovely. I think I'd really like that as well. I often think about just renting a cottage somewhere up like at the top of Scotland and just being on my own for like a few weeks. That's what kids do to you.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, so which order do you want to do? Pudding, music, and whiskey?
Pudding first. And this has been quite hard, but I think, as one or two of your previous people have said, it's got to be the old sticky toppy pudding.
Oh, my days. No, it's an absolute landslide.
This is the most popular.
Yeah.
If I'm starting a new political party, I would call it the sticky toffee pudding party, and I would automatically get in just based on the popularity of that dessert.
I think it was a toss-up between that and Eton Mess, but I kind of thought an Eton Mess.
Oh, the Paul Hawkesby special.
Maybe just something warm to warm me up in the cold.
Sticky toffee pudding is, honestly, it's like an institution at this point. So how do you have your sticky toffee pudding then?
It has to be with ice cream. Obviously, again, the finest Madagascan
vanilla ice cream.
Yeah, ice cream.
Lovely.
Nice. Yeah.
So can't argue with that. Yeah. And then should we do music next then?
This is a hard one for me because I'm not one who listens to albums or have favourite type of artists or anything. So
you also let slip he used to be a DJ before we came on. So I picked up on that. Did you have a DJ name?
Let's skip past that one.
you were called DJ, let's skip past that one.
We're not talking about that. You've got to get me drunk to get that one out.
Noted.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when I was DJing, it was all a beginning of raves and acid music.
Oh, right. Okay, proper DJing, not like wedding DJing.
Hacienda.
Things like that. Helter Skelter, stuff like that.
Quality.
I think if I had to take music now, and this is I'm dreading this now because of one of your comments earlier, it would probably be a country music compilation.
Oh, my days. You and Stu Dick in a room together. Just lit.
Do you
want to talk to us about
the
subset
already.
Of what country music? What are you in? Like horror country, like trad country, contemporary country, country with dinner.
But I would probably make a 2 or 3 hour compilation. But I would have jazz and everything in there.
So you want to make your own thing then?
Yeah.
You want to make your own mixtape?
Yeah, basically. You know, go back to my old days and mix a bit of jazz and a bit of country and a bit of acid and stuff like that.
So do you know, is there anything you can think, like, is there anything that you can think of at the top of your head where, like, I would definitely have that song on my mixtape? Because you can create your own Spotify playlist these days, so it's possible.
Yeah, I mean, there's one now that's Stay in the Truck. It's sort of a story
about... Stay in the
Truck? Yeah, basically it's a story about how this chap's driving down the road, sees a woman in front of him that's being battered by somebody who's drunk.
Yeah.
He gets her in the truck, goes and kills the bloke who's done it and serves time for her. So,
Stay in the Truck. That sounds heavy, you're saying.
Very
Is it by Hardy featuring Lainey Wilson?
Yeah, that's the one.
Right, okay. So that'd be on your mixtape.
That'd be on my mixtape. And then just some dance, typical dance music from back in the early 90s.
Darude Sandstorm, would that be on the mixtape? Or is that too no, that's not good enough.
Too commercial.
Proper underground stuff. But yeah, it's something I don't do a lot of, is listen to music. Right. I just don't have time.
Yeah. Well, especially you've got the farm as well, haven't you? So
yeah,
fair enough. But at least you're going to know how to deal with animals on this.
Well, hopefully there will be some,
slice of paradise. So what about the whiskey then? Like, so you've got Sticky Toffee Pudding, you've made your own mixtape, which includes some sort of dark horror story of a song.
Yeah.
And some music that's too trendy for me to possibly comprehend.
Probably.
What about whiskey? What about the whiskey? Yeah.
This is something that I've sort of, from the very beginning when we first started talking about coming on, and I kind of heard this and thought, right, what whiskey would I take? And I've always gone, whenever anybody says, what's the one whiskey if you could do without? It was an Ockentosh in 1979.
Wow.
30-year-old whiskey. And it's just one of those whiskeys that screams proper sherried, dark, deep, musty type whiskeys.
The ones that got the sort of like the flat, you know, like, yeah, the mustiness and like the confusion baked in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Or a Glenfarclas 40.
Wow.
That sort of thing. But I've had to go back to the Ockentosh because it's the one whiskey that when I first bought my first bottle, I'd been searching for one for a long time. And I bought it and I was so scared to open it because of what it cost me at that time. Oof. And I couldn't justify buying it when I bought it. And I actually bought it on my wife's birthday.
That's a classic whiskey fan story.
Yeah.
On your wife's birthday, you spent an extortionate amount of money on
so
yourself.
Good.
We were sat in a...
How did you mentally justify that? I love it.
We were sat in a coffee shop. And she knew I was looking at something. And she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, looking at this whiskey. And she said, just buy it. I'm like, yeah, but you don't know how much it is. Just buy it. I'm like, I can't justify it. Just buy it. So I bought it. Right. And then it was, so how much was it? And it was like, what do you mean you spent that? So
how can you spend that much money on whiskey? Yeah, but you said you'd just buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't think it was going to cost that much. Yeah.
So when I spoke to the shop, it was like, how many bottles have you got? And they said, oh, we've literally got three. No, obviously there's only two left. So it was like, send them all.
Oh, wow. So you bought two.
So I bought three altogether.
Three? Send it. Yeah. Oh, my days.
So we've got two set up here now.
Wow. And that's your favourite ever whiskey?
I can see the old Ockentosh labels there. If I could only take one bottle of whiskey and that was it forever, that would be the bottle I'd take.
Yeah.
1979,
32-year-old,
yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. That's great. And when did you first try that whiskey to realise it was your favourite? How did you try that whiskey to realise it was your favourite?
Ockentosh was one of the first whiskies I ever bought, and I bought it from the supermarket as,
yeah,
I think it was £17 a bottle, and it was an Ockentosh Select. And it was just one of those whiskies that, going back then, I used to sort of drink my whiskey, a good shot with a bit of lemonade. And it was just the perfect summer whiskey, and sort of got more and more into Ockentosh. And it just grew and grew, and then started buying the single casks and independent bottlings. And the 1979 always got the reviews of probably the best whiskey that's come out of that distillery. So, of course, you've got to try it at some point. And having a bit of a collection of Ockentosh, then it was one that I had to buy. And
triple distilled Oloroso Magic, 50.5%. Yeah, nice.
Oh, that's great. So actually, That's the most thought I think anyone's put into answering the whiskey question on the island. Hands down. Yeah. So it's just you in like the middle of some sort of Finnish forest in the middle of nowhere with your sticky toffee pudding and your 1979, 32-year-old sherry cask Okotoshin.
We'll be up waving the bottle back as well, though. I'll be too scared to open it.
And so who would pick you up then at the end of 30 days when you're... Who would pick you up and, you know, in which way would they, you know, how are you going to get home?
I would say the wife and kids, but they probably won't turn up. They'd probably just leave me there.
Mike, you get a hard time from Mike from Go. You can, anyone in the world can pick you up. You see their wife and kids soon enough.
You could get Jeremy Clarkson to pick you up if you wanted.
I'm going that way then. Who would I know? I think it would probably be my wife, my daughters and my grandchildren because...
All of them together.
And my dog,
like a birthday party.
Well, the dog's in the back of the car as well. Right, yeah, I think the dogs would be the only ones that actually miss me though.
I was getting the dogs to pick you up isn't a bad shout. Like, I mean, they can't drive, but they're going to give you, you're going to at least feel like you were missed, right?
Yeah, well, exactly. 100%. I mean, the puppies probably wouldn't be able to drive. They'd have to sit in the back seat. But yeah, the old girl, she'd come for me. Yeah. She'd be with me anyway, because I don't think she'd let me go on my own. So
what types of dogs have you got then?
Three labs.
Okay, nice. Yeah. Do you ever post any pictures of them? I can't remember if I've seen any pictures of them.
I posted a couple of the puppies we'd bought recently. I try not to put too much of my personal life on social media. Nobody's interested in that. They only want to know about the whiskey.
Yeah, we're the same. We just keep it whiskey really as well. Yeah. We get that. All right. Okay. Well, nice. Thanks for sharing your Pudding Island dram story. I have to say as well, before I forget, because I will forget, and actually this Wireworks Downward, which is also with the Upwards or Upwards.
Is it a yoga series?
No. They said they're curious about the potential role different warehouse locations at Wireworks play on flavour, etc. So it's an identical malt batch, and then the cask strength is 63.5, and then the SDR casks are identical. And then they've played around with the location of where the casks are stored. But this Downwards one, it does have they say vanilla fudge to finish, and it's light biscuity for all notes on the palate, fruity sweet. That's about right. Actually, that little vinegary note's gone. It's decent. It's pretty good. I mean, it's tasty. I mean, if you are a Wireworks fan, I'm sure you would really like it. It's a solid dram. There's nought wrong with it. It's decent. Nice vanilla fudge note in the end. I have to say that because earlier I said I wasn't 100% keen. It just needed a little bit of oxygen, not water, just needed to sit in the glass just for a little bit. So we were going to just talk a little bit about whiskey road tripping in England. Now, do any of us know how many English whiskey distilleries there are currently?
Yes.
Yes, Mike.
47.
47? That sounds way too high. You sure isn't like 30?
Higher.
How many?
I think the last time I got an update, we was into the 50s.
50? So, but a lot of those make more than just whiskey, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, and some of them obviously...
Adnams.
You from America?
But yeah, there's roughly 50, 55 now.
50 to 55. So we're not sure on the exact number. Now, Whiskey Chap's website, it's Whiskey with an E, he has a nice locational map on there so you can go and see where some of them are located. I'm not sure he has
Cooper
all 50.
Cooper King did 49.
Yeah.
So it was 49 when Cooper King came.
And that was from the 5th edition 2023.
Right. I mean, there's a lot that I'm thinking about now that I hadn't written down before, like Filey Bay and Henstone. And there is loads, right? I mean,
there's loads.
Hellstone from down in Cornwall.
Yeah. Hellstone? Goodness me. If you're going to plan a whiskey road trip in England, they're all so spread out, right? And the roads are rubbish. For a start, you need a car that's going to be able to put up with potholes. Don't get me started on potholes again. But like, where would you start and where would you want to go and hit if you were going to hit some English whiskey distilleries? I've written some down, but what do you guys think?
Well, I mean, as an ambassador for the English whiskey, I think you've got to visit us being the first distillery to reopen in England. So
over 15 years old now.
So yeah. Nearly 18.
Nearly 18, yeah. 2007 or something like that, right?
2007, yeah. So 2006. So, you know, if that's where the history of English whiskey started.
That's the point of origin of English whiskey, isn't it, really? So I can do a summation on that one. So basically, it's very straightish roads that sort of flat straightish roads that go out towards Norwich.
Yeah.
And on the way towards Norwich, on the A11.
A11.
On the A11, you will pass the English whiskey distillery, yeah. right? Very close to paintball, so you can always stack the two together. Yeah. You can go and have a few drams, then afterwards you can go and play paintball and shoot people, close-ish. It's a really nice distillery, actually. You go in, a nice big car park, plenty of parking, big building. You've got the kind of, you can go and do the tour, lovely, spacious, airy shop. There's food now on site, isn't there? There's a restaurant.
Yeah.
It is a good place to visit. It's actually really pleasant, friendly staff. When I drive and go to Norwich, I often just pop in and then go and see what there is and pick up something small batch or whatever that's knocking around on the shelves. The problem with Norfolk or Norwich is it's quite far away from the rest of the country. Now, it's connected by dual carriageway now. You kind of have to layer stuff up. And when I started to look at like the English whiskey distilleries and where they are, I started to think that it might be more sensible to tag together distilleries with breweries to visit if you were going to do like an English road trip. Whereas in Scotland, you could easily go and hit 5, 6, 7 distilleries in an area, right? But in England, that's not quite so possible. It's like, if I look at the ones that, if you go to East Coast, you've got like Adnams, and then you've got obviously, it's St. George's Distillery, really, isn't it? That's what it's actually called.
Yeah, well, actually, we are going more to the English.
You're losing that part of it. It's becoming the English whiskey distillery, yeah. Those two, Suffolk and Norfolk, aren't too far away from each other. You could, of course, you know, Adnams itself is a brewery, isn't it? So you can kind of tie that together.
Yeah, I think there's Green King, is it?
Yeah, that's Bury St. Edmunds Green King, but you could do that. Yeah, you could visit past Green King on the way as you're going back through Bury St. Edmunds. You can come off there and then go off on your way. So I jotted down some of the ones I think you'd have to hit. So let's see what you guys think and what you'd add to it. So Adnams, I would do Adnams because it's a distillery and brewery, right? The English whiskey distillery, definitely. That's 100% would be on my list. Bimber, if you're going to go for West London. And I also thought Bimber's quite close to Fuller's. So, you know, in London. So you can do a tour of Fuller's and you could go to Bimber too. Obviously, there'll be other places brewing beer in London. Knock yourself out. Cotswolds, I think, is a bit of a must, isn't it? If you're in that part.
Yeah,
definitely.
Lakes, you mentioned Lakes earlier, Soren. I mean, Lakes really is one that you'd want to hit. But that's like Lake District. So it gets a little hard to try to string together. I think Spirit of Birmingham's very up and coming in the city of Birmingham. White Peak.
In the city of Birmingham.
So Wireworks is the brand, but White Peak, I think, is a bit of a destination one to go. And I put like Wheatwood question mark. Which are the other English whiskey distilleries that you think would be ones that you definitely want to visit?
If you're going to be around my area, then if you're doing White Peaks, you need to go to Cooper King as well. Abby and Chris, absolutely great couple. And then drinking whiskey sort of in that New Zealand, Tasmanian style. So
really?
You're
pointing at your hat, Mike. Does that mean it says Cooper King?
I can't work out. Hands won't work. There we go, Cooper King. Right there.
Yeah, there it is.
So, do they all do tours? Like, I mean, the ones I've been to, I think, you know, I've been to Bimber, Lakes, English whiskey distillery. I haven't been to Adams. I haven't been to a whole bunch of them, really, considering it's in England, right? So
Cooper King's decent, as you said. It's a Tassie setup. They worked over in Tasmania, got the idea, came back, and basically just put it all on the line and risked setting this thing up. They've got it's super environmentally friendly. I think they've completed their house on site as well, which is like something amazing to behold because they've got their own super eco-friendly house. It's bizarre. It heats itself. It also stays cool on its own.
Cleans its own windows.
Basically, absolutely fantastic. And they were super friendly. Abby used to be a scientist.
Right.
And she was coming up with some weird and wonderful ways to produce gin and flavor gin that no one else was doing. And she was getting some real like crazy extractions from some of the stuff. So all that knowledge into it and just dived into whiskey.
But do you two see my point? Like, so how do you string a road trip together through England?
It's going to take some time.
Where are you starting? Are you going to go from like East Coast and then go sort of up a bit, back down to London, then back up like Cotswolds?
I'd probably start north and head south if it was me. Yeah. Start the lakes and come down.
So where would you hit on the way then?
So you'd have to do Spirit of Yorkshire.
Yeah.
So
Spirit of Yorkshire. Filey Bay. Yeah.
Cooper King, Fireworks.
So you can hit three there plus lakes. That's four, isn't it?
Yeah. And then get across to us overnight. Spend the morning with us in Norfolk.
Yeah.
Dodge all the tractors.
Then go to Adnams afterwards.
But you've got to come and obviously try the world's best whiskey while you're with us.
Of course.
I'm trying to get that on camera. Can you see that? Forgan.
Those guys? Corn whiskey.
Yeah, really. That's like one of the old Well, I actually sent that to the bloke who runs the distillery. When I haven't seen that bottle in a long time.
Yeah.
One of my favourite whiskies. It was a Southport whiskey special release.
Yeah.
And it's US bourbon, but made in England. And it is absolutely fabulous. And I am sadly nearly there.
Yeah, you're going to have to get
a couple more drams before I have to finish it.
So what kind of flights or tours are available then at the English Whiskey Company then?
So we do daily tours on the hour, you know, just your general, have a look around the distillery, go through the warehouse, see the bottling plant, see how, because everything's on site, try a couple of whiskies, some liqueurs. And then we do a couple more in-depth ones. So we do a behind the scenes, we do a cocktail, we do a make your own whiskey. We do a world whiskey tour. So there is lots of different styles of tours available depending when you're going to be going. So yeah, we do more of our big tours purely on a weekend. And then through the week, it's just all, you have a look around the distillery and learn how we make whiskey.
Well, what do you two think makes a good whiskey distillery tour? Like, price point, if you're paying 25 quid, 30 quid or whatever a ticket, I don't know what's the sort of fair going rate these days, but what do you think makes a good whiskey distillery tour? What's going to get you there, other than a picturesque setting and the fact that it's
drivable? I think for me, want a tour guide that's not scripted. Yeah. I want a tour guide that shows the passion for the whiskey. You know, somebody that understands what that whiskey is to that distillery, what that location is. You know, I don't want somebody that's just literally going to tell me a script and then when you ask any questions, haven't got a clue about what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't mind, because a topic came up the other day about, do you want somebody that drinks whiskey? Not necessarily, as long as they understand the passion behind it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't, they'd have to drink a lot of whiskey, but I would really like somebody that does enjoy whiskey themselves to be doing the tour. They don't have to drink it at the time, but obviously, but I think it's hard to be passionate about something if you don't, you know. You can
show passion, because if you're making it or if you're involved in the process of the distillery, then you can still have a passion for it.
Yeah, I guess, but I think at some point you would have been consumed. It's like saying that, you ride track days on a motorbike. You don't do it now because you're getting old, but you used to do it and you still watch it and you're super passionate about it and you talk about it. I think you have to have experienced it at some point. It doesn't mean you have to be, it doesn't have to be a constant throughout your life. So if I stopped drinking whiskey tomorrow, I'd still be really passionate about whiskey. I think you could still be passionate. I'm just not quite sure that it would be the same type of passion. That makes sense.
No, I mean, it's not going to be the same type of passion, but it can still be a passion that comes across.
So enthusiastic, basically, like, yeah.
Enthusiastic, yeah. But, you know, you've got to have that involvement. You know, you've got to feel when you're on the tour that you're kind of getting something special. Even if it's the same as everybody else,
yeah,
you want to feel special on that tour.
I think some things that can make a difference is just some food. It doesn't have to be a lot. Like when we go to like sit at Scotch Malt Whiskey Society, you know, we'll pay for the nuts, like the smoked Albans. You just need something to go along with it. You know, it doesn't have to be, it's not a meal. I think sometimes if you're going to do like try five whiskies and you're going to go through, you might just want some snacks. Just feels like whatever it is, like bag of crackers or something like that. I don't know.
For me, it's all about value. I think if you were paying 50 quid or whatever the price is, I would expect to pay less than the retail for the samples on a tasting, because you're making the effort to go there, you're learning, blah, blah, blah. Whatever your cost is, you should be getting
better whiskey than what you're paying for. The experience feel like an experience and not just like you're trying five whiskies. That's the point, isn't it, right?
Yeah. So, but I'm just saying that's a big part of it. Like I've been to some tastings and you're like, I've literally paid retail here and there's nothing I probably couldn't have just sort of experienced and picked up myself off the internet. You haven't added anything.
Lighting's a lot of it. So in terms of how he feels. And I think when you do distillery tours during the day, it's obviously quite bright. But if you think about like Bimba, if you go and do an evening tasting at Bimba, it's all, after you've been around the distillery, it's all dimly lit. And it feels like you're in some sort of like cozy restaurant somewhere.
Not an industrial estate.
No. But then it feels like an experience because, you know, the lighting's affecting your sort of sensory input, right? So if you're in like bright light in the middle of the day, it's like, how do you make it feel like you're not just standing around or sitting around trying five whiskies in a room at the distillery? Yeah. I think that's part of the challenge for them, right?
Yeah, I think another important thing, and there's only really one distillery that I can think of that does it good, and that's when you get there, sit down, cup of coffee, and help with you, and that's Balvenie.
Oh, really?
You know, Balvenie, you get there, it's a group of 6 to 8 people. You walk in, sit down, pour you a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, a biscuit.
There we go. That's what I'm talking about.
And then we go on a tour.
It's like when you go to a hairdresser's, you know, not a barber's, a hairdresser's, and you get a cup of coffee and a biscuit. That's all you want.
Yeah.
And a good haircut, hopefully. But, you know, yeah, okay. Well, what else do you think? Do you think there's anything else that can make a... Have you been to any kind of, like, more, like, unique whiskey tours? I mean, like, what about, like, the special stuff, like some, you know, under-the-counter stuff or a special bottle? Are you expecting standard whiskey only?
No, I think the other side, again, going back to sort of Balvenie, is where you can go and get something straight from a cask and buy it. And you can only buy it if you're at the distillery at that time.
That makes
time.
A big difference, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one of the other great tours that I did was up at Loch Lomond. Mm. And, you know, you sort of, it's kind of an invite-only type thing. You go, and when I went, I did it with Ibn, and it was all day. You got there at 10 o'clock, you left at 4 or 5 o'clock, and they fed you at dinner time.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
You go around the cooperage, you look at everything, and we sort of had a tasting at the end of it. And obviously, back then I was kind of doing my blog and things like that. So I don't know if it was, I don't think it was special treatment, but it felt special because you had Michael Henry come and talk to you.
Yeah.
And take you through a tasting. Now, that to me felt special to me because, as far as I'm concerned, nobody else gets that treatment. But obviously, everybody
but
else
if
does.
You, I think that this the thing where you feel like you're a bit involved or you're learning about it beyond just trying the whiskey, you know, like rather than going around and looking, if you can find a way to involve people in some sort of safe way, even if it's just like a demonstration type thing where they're able to actually touch it or do whatever.
Even like the cooperage was so cool. Like you don't see that very often, really.
But is there anywhere in England you can go and see a cooperage?
There's one which is Yorkshire based.
One your way, the one bloke, he's the only master cooper.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and but life of me, I can't think what it's called.
Yeah.
It's all right, we'll find it and put it in the episode.
But again, another thing that you want when you go on a tour is if you've done the tour before, you don't want the exact same thing. That's why, I mean, I do a members tour on our open day. Another quick plug.
Oh.
On the 20th of July, we have an open day and I do the members tasting. And every tasting we do is different. And it's designed that you will only get whiskies on that day that nobody else can ever buy.
Right.
And that you know, that sort of thing where, again, you're trying to make somebody feel special, unique, and they can go away and say,
especially
oh,
when
try
massages have been banned. It's not. So you're trying to make someone feel special. Massage is not allowed. You're gonna have to rely on the quality of the whiskey and the fact it's different or unique. Yeah.
But obviously having the world's best whiskey makes it a lot easier.
You need to get some T-shirts made up. I mean, just go whole hog. Well, often when I see you at events, you're often wearing quite a nice. Yeah. Grey suit type combo, sort of waistcoat type thing.
Yeah. I've kind of gone away from that and gone more English whiskey
branded.
A logo of the shirt, but I always believe that if you're behind the stance, and this is not a go at anybody else, this is just a personal opinion. Yeah. You have to look smart. Mm-hmm. You are the face of that brand. Mm. If I'm stood there and it's literally somebody with a holy jeans and a t-shirt. That may be the way they dress, and you know that's nothing to do with me, and I'm not trying to belittle anybody or anything like that. But for me, if I'm not smart or how I consider smart, I feel I'm letting the distillery down.
Yeah, you want to make more of a statement in terms of how you.
Yeah,
I get that.
You know, I mean, it's not the be all and end all, but for me, I feel as though I've got to look smart. I mean, you know, I get people. Some of the other ambassadors, it's like, you've missed the wedding, mate. You know?
Oh, you know, my days. That's why you've changed what you wear. It's the banter.
You know, it's banter. Yeah, and that's the beautiful thing about it all. But, you know, to me, I just feel that I've got to try and look smart behind the stand.
Yeah.
It's like Dave always...
Dave's
lovely,
always
like little
lines,
suits and stuff on. Yeah. Gentlemen.
Gentlemen. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And it was Jensen's Cooperage that Cooper King used.
So, on the road tripping thing, is there anything that you think is essential to take on a whiskey road trip with you?
Ooh.
Water.
Just a boot full of water.
Sleeping bag.
I think I'd take some. I think I'd take some sample bottles in case anyone's feeling fruity.
Yeah, I mean that's one thing I would hope Hillary's would do for people that are driving as well. You know, let them take their samples away.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Because you know, if you want to take it back to your accommodation and drink it later, you can only try one or two or whatever.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think if you turn up to a distillery and you're driving and you've paid your dues. And then at the end of it, they say, no, you either drink it here or
that'll be out of order, I think. I mean, they've got to give it away anyway, but...
Well, saying that, I mean, I did go to one distillery up in Scotland and I'd literally got 9 or 10 bottles ready to purchase. I've not done the tour, but I've got 9 or 10 bottles ready to purchase and they weren't cheap bottles. There was one that I said, is there any chance of having a try? Not unless you go on the tour.
Lefroy? Right.
No.
You could just keep guessing, Mike, and at some point they'd have to tell you. But like,
there are quite a few bottles just there.
Oh, Glendronach.
Okay. 9 or 10. Wow. Okay.
I think I heard some bad things recently on Twitter about their tours. So there's a lot of people moaning.
I mean, I've done some tours at Glendronach and they are good. You know, I'm not putting down the tours. It was just one of those where I was dropping some serious money on that day. Mm-hmm. And it was just literally asked to try, I think it was to bottle your own or something like that. And it was like, it was, you know, we can't give you one unless you've been on a tour. And I just, you know, it's like, well, you want me to pay £5 to go on a tour? Well, I'll just give you a £5 and try it.
You've got
to
go on the tour.
Yeah.
You've got to go
on the
tour.
That was like, I was watching, I think I saw on Instagram somebody, I'm sure it was, who's that footballer? Pete, the tall fella.
Pete Crouch.
Yeah, Peter Crouch. And he was saying he was on holiday with his missus somewhere and they were in the wrong part of Ibiza, like the north part or something. And so they went out to a restaurant and she ordered like some sort of white fish and he wanted the paella. Paella, right?
Paella.
So he orders the paella and the guy's like, no, it's a dish for two people. And he's like, don't worry about it. I'll just, you know, I'll eat as much as I can. He's like, no, I'm not going to serve it to you.
Yeah.
His missus said, I'll have some as well. Then, you know, just we'll have the paella and I'll have some too. And the guy's like, no, now I know.
Oh, I love it.
And he wouldn't serve it to them. And so that's a bit like the whiskey tour. Like they won't let you buy the bottle, even though you're willing to pay the £5. They're like, no, you've got to go on the tour. It's like jobs worth. Right? It's just unnecessary, isn't it?
Is it the Ricky Gervais sketch where he, I can't remember what program it is. And he goes into a cafe and he's not really hungry and he's with his nephew or something. And he's like, oh, he'll have the kids' sausage and chips and I'll have the same. You can't have that. That's for kids. He went, okay, he wants two portions.
Oh, yeah, I love that. Yeah. Two portions. And the guy's like eyeballing him. Because he's like making sure he doesn't eat it.
Piling it into his mouth.
Amazing. Amazing. Is there anything you'd change about the world of whiskey, Soren? You could.
Whiskey Room 101.
Yeah, anything you put into Whiskey Room 101,
It's not so, I don't know. One thing that kind of does bugbear me is, especially now I'm working in the industry and I kind of see how it works a little bit more, is the concept of, well, this distillery can put this whiskey out at this price, but you're charging more. And people don't always understand that if you're a smaller distillery, that you haven't got as many bottles, you know, your pricing isn't spread quite as much. I mean, take us, for example, we produce around 80,000 litres a year. That's the same as what Glenfiddich do every single day.
Yeah, it's crazy when you put it like that, isn't it?
Now, you know, their pricing is spread over 365 times whiskey.
Does somebody from Glenfiddich just call you up? You get a phone call about 6 in the evening and they go, we just produced more than you did this whole year. Laters. Phone goes up.
Just private number. Yeah. We did it again.
Oh, my God, they've called us again. Stop calling us.
You know, this is the thing, and I mean, I can start going on, you know, age statements. Age statements don't mean naff anymore. You know, it doesn't tell you, other than the youngest whiskey in the bottle, it doesn't tell you how good it is, what cask it was, the colour of whiskey, doesn't tell you, the darker it is doesn't mean that it's better. There's all these little misconceptions.
Oh my God, you've just made me think. I'd love to do a joke range of whiskey, which is just single cask, Nat. Every whiskey's a single cask. No details.
And I think the main message I would like to get out over to everybody is, you buy a bottle of whiskey, Drink it how you want.
Yeah.
Don't listen to people that say you can't mix it. If you want to mix it, you mix it. You've paid for it. Drink
so
it how
your
you
biggest
want.
Bugbear then about the world whiskey, what you put into Room 101 is people trying to tell you how to drink the whiskey.
Yeah. You know, it's one of these things that here, oh, don't add water. If it's a 55% cask, you know, cask strength bottle, that means 45% is
the,
water.
The next follow-up episode, sorry, and it's going to be us with a bottle of the best single malt whiskey in the world. And Mike and I just mixing it with different sugary drinks from the local Turkish shop.
Don't care.
No, don't we don't care either. We actually, we're on the same vein. We're like, and actually sometimes, in order to make a good drink, you need good ingredients, like in all seriousness. Yeah. So like,
yeah,
exactly. So if you're going to make cocktails, like I'll put good single malt in cocktails and things like that, right? Because I want the flavor profile from that single malt. And some people are like, oh, why are you mixing? I'm like, because what did I make at the weekend? Somerton Whiskey Adnams, 10-year-old. Yeah. And I made an old fashioned with that, with celery bitters and orange blossom honey.
Fuck, you got too much time on your hands.
And it took about 30 seconds to make. But the point is it works really well. Because it's like, you know, like it's like, it's already kind of sweet. But, you know, like Burbs cask, isn't it? Right. And then the celery gave it, the bitters gave it a slight offset, which actually I think that whiskey needs a little bit. Right. And then the orange blossom honey just gave it a bit more texture. Beautiful. You know, it doesn't matter, does it? I mean, like, I'll never get this again. This is like a one off. Doesn't matter if you, it doesn't matter what you do with it. If you're going into a pub, your local pub's a bit rubbish. What three whiskies would you put behind the bar, Soren, if you were going to, you know, help them to sort their shizzle out?
Obviously, the world's best,
whiskey. You do know we're going to overlay loads of sound.
And then the
this.
Other three.
Yeah. Just three bottles of that. Job done.
The world's very best whiskey at a very affordable price.
Is it 59 quid?
59 quid for the world's best whiskey. I mean, bloody hell. What three whiskies?
It's okay to say that as one of them. I mean, to be fair, it is.
I am saying that as one of them.
Of course, it's fine to say that. Yeah.
I think one of the other whiskies that I've always loved would be a Paul John Select.
Really?
Yes.
That's a wacky choice, isn't it? Paul John Select. Mm. Hey, wow.
Yeah. It was one of the whiskies that I've never got to grips with because it changes so much and it's just a fantastic whiskey. That's what I put. Glenmorangie. I'd have to have a Glenmorangie.
Oh, Glenmorangie.
Glenmorangie.
Yeah, now, if I could choose any to put in there, it would be a 1994 that they brought out several years ago.
So that'd be
ago.
Like the sort of premium end, even though Glenmorangie is quite affordable. That'd be more premium because it'd be like an older bottling or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I think at the time it was about £125 a bottle. You know, it was a bargain. And the main reason I'd put that in, I'll plug it, because it was actually distilled and made in the month and year my daughter was born.
Oh, that's nice.
So it's one of those whiskies that there's still, I think, a case full up there. I think I bought most of
nice.
Them.
Oh, nice.
Oh, my day. So you do have a lot of whiskey knocking about, don't you? So...
That's good.
Don't ask how much.
We won't. We never ask such things because we understand the sensibilities around it.
This is one of the first times I feel inadequate with my background. I'm not going to lie.
Like your tiny whiskey selection.
I feel outmaneuvered, outgunned, out everything here.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful wall.
Barrels in there, you got barrel heads in there. Like, that's a big old room.
Do you?
That barrel is full.
It's what? Hang on. Did you say that barrel's full?
Yeah.
Ah, I
see. There's two barrels. So the top one and the bottom one are full. And then there's a wine cask here.
What are you aging?
What do you say? What have you got put in there? It or whatever?
So the top one is kind of secret, but it's a mix of whiskies. Okay. That's as much as
you're sort
say.
Of infinity cask type thing. Yeah.
Basically, yeah. The one below it, it's not all us.
All us plebs, we're like, oh, you have to an infinity bowl. Soren's like, infinity cask.
Infinity cask.
hold my beer. Infinity cask.
Get out, noobs.
Yeah.
The beauty of that one is that it's a 30-litre cask full of unpeated whiskey into a ex-peated cask.
Oh,
so,
nice.
Lovely.
I took about 3 litres out before it got peated, or before it got the smoke effect.
Cool.
I keep taking a bottle out every 6 months now, just to try it. But
is the colour changing quite nicely over that period, or is it nice, or is it slow? I suppose you've got a constant temperature.
The colour has darkened quite a lot, actually. Yeah, And you know, I am one of these people that do like whiskey out of the smaller casks. The small group of people that we had under the whiskey circus, we did sort of 5 quarter cask bottlings. Oakiness in that is just, it's just a different drink. Yeah. It really
the
is.
The old QC, yeah. You do, yeah. Yeah. That's true. But what about the big one? Are you able to say what's in that? Did I?
The big one is an ex Auchentoshan sherry cask. Oh. Well, it's a sherry hoggy, actually.
So you got the whole cask shipped to you or whatever.
Yeah.
That's mad, sorry. Honestly.
They wouldn't give him a sample, but they gave him a
I feel like you need to rock up in like some sort of gold gown or something with like black letter, like Whiskey King on the back.
Yeah.
And then that one there.
Oh, what?
That's from Chateau Lacroix, which is the chateau where Auchentoshan get their wine cask from.
Mega. Mind blown. Oh, well, that's amazing.
That's so good.
It's so nice to see, though. You're just so unbelievably passionate about whiskey.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Drinking it, yeah. Collecting it. Like, I love the, you're talking about
aging it.
I love the Auchentoshan story about the 1979 one. That's fantastic. Is there anything else today you wanted to share on the Podski?
Just, you know, I just want people to go out, find whiskey that they appreciate, and let that whiskey take you on a journey. Because if you understand whiskey to a degree and get into whiskey like some of us do, then a whiskey should be able to take you on a journey. And I don't mean you're gonna get in a car and go down the road, obviously, but you know,
you'll be on a bus going from Tanaka to Tour of Vague that Stuart Dix organised.
It should be able to, you know, sort of transport you into some other place, you know, just take the worries away. And I'm not talking about drinking loads and loads so you're comatose, but to me, a good whiskey will talk to you. It will give you
like a conversation, right? You just, this is why, like, I'm a big firm believer in, like, not all the time, because obviously we sit and watch TV or we listen to music, but sometimes just with the whiskey, like nothing else, you know, no music, no TV, peace and quiet, just with the whiskey, a pad, you know, if you're doing notes, if you're not, just enjoy it. So for you, it's about people just really just tapping into it, just really making time to really get to know it.
Whiskey is a drink for the people. So if you're out at a festival or in a pub and somebody's having a drink at the side of you, it's not about who they are or where they're from. It's the fact that they're drinking whiskey along with you. And you have that sort of connection with somebody that you've never met. I mean, that's one of the nice things about doing festivals. People come up to you who you recognize by face because you've seen them before, but it's almost like a long lost friend's come to talk to you. And people, you know, the friendliness in that sense where they come up and they trust me to give them a whiskey that I hope they'll enjoy. Mm. That's the beauty of whiskey to me. And that's what, if there's one thing to take away from whiskey, is just enjoy it.
Do you know what the funny thing is sometimes when you meet people, you get to know people and they have these really strong views, and you have a really strong view about this, right? Super passionate. But when you shrink it right down, how does that affect what they do? And one of the things I noticed that you did at Kendall that I've very rarely seen with the Virgin Oak, I think it was Virgin Oak Quarter Cask, or was it Virgin Oak? Yeah, Quarter Cask, right? Which is like a short run bottle that you had at the festival at Kendall, is you'd pour it for people, no question, but then you had the glass just sitting on the stand so that people could sniff side by side, see how much it's changed. Now, we know it changes in the glass, but just you reinforcing that for like experienced whiskey drinkers and new whiskey drinkers alike is so powerful. And the thing is, that's because that's how much you care about it. You want people to realize that it needs time, that it will change, right? And so I thought at the time, you know, how powerful that was. But that's just one thing that you did, which I thought sort of set you apart. So I don't know if other people start stealing it. But the reason you do that is because you're so passionate about it, right?
If you're at a festival and I pour you a drink and you literally minutes or however long you want to stand and talk to me and you want to try that whiskey, once you've had one or two, you don't always appreciate what you've got in your glass. You either like it or you don't, type thing. But if you can then hand somebody and say, what do you think to this? And people have obviously said, that's fantastic. What's this? Well, it's what you've got in your glass, but half an hour later or an hour later. Help people understand that whiskey will change. Even if it's a fresh bottle, it will change.
Yeah. Oh my God, mind blown. Can you imagine if somebody on a whiskey stand, like any distillery, did the thing and they only had one whiskey bottle on the stand and all they had was the whiskey bottle. They had like, you know, three bottles full, three bottles the third gone, three bottles half gone, 6 months in the cupboard. And that was all they did. And it was like the change in the bottle over time. And people go up and go, what have you got? One bottle. And they're like, I can see like 10 bottles, 15 on the stand. Yeah. It's all the same bottle at different time intervals with different amounts of air in the bottle. People would be like, mind blown, right? Like concept whiskey, right?
But I have seen that in a sense where you have a distillery might turn up and they'll have three different expressions, but one bottle is already open from another festival.
Yeah, so you can have that, yeah.
And you'll pour that and people, you know, you'll taste it and you think, do you know that? That's different to what I'm used to. Then you'll go back an hour or two later or the next day if it's another session. So just let me have another one because that was fun. Yeah. And you think, not the same as yesterday because it's a fresh bottle or an open bottle. So yeah, all these things really do make a difference. And, you know, a lot of the time you'll get people where they'll taste something, buy a bottle, get it home, and it's not what they thought they'd tasted.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people also say like, oh, I think they're putting out better quality of the same product or higher ABV. I'm like, no one's got time to do that kind of thing. Like not on...
for decades or years.
Yeah, over like a long period of time, it will change, but not in the short term. Not so much.
Not in the short term, really. No.
It's the same malted barley or grain or whatever, the same distillery process. Unless something's gone wrong, you might have the odd weird batch, in which case they won't use it, right?
Yeah.
You know, or they'll do what Ardbeg does. Put it to one side and then put a marketing spin on it. And then boom, before you know it, you can buy it for £55 on auction websites. Boom, mic drop.
Yeah.
That's what Scorch went for. Scorch went for 55 quid last night in SWA. £100 NAS Ardbeg, £55 a pop.
Yeah.
That was lovely. So 45, stuff as well. The committee release was outstanding.
Honestly, shout out to anyone that's an Ardbeg fan. Now is the time to be piling in and snuffling them up on auctions. To drink, they were going for
250 a pop. I mean, whatever committee release it was, 250 a pop to pick it up there.
There is a plentiful supply being sent to auctions by people who bought them not to drink but to speculate. Now's the time to hoover those up.
Yeah.
Get them in your tummy.
Teach them a lesson.
Yeah,
get them in your
tummy. In your belly. So, if this episode wasn't vaguely about road trips, because we're now doing this sort of road trip series, I was tempted to suggest we were going to call it. Soren seems to be the hardest word, the Elton John song.
Oh, God.
It's been amazing.
Outstanding work,
right? That's what happens when we pick a theme. It would have been so good. And then we could have, we would have got to do my Elton John impressions and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm on it already. I'm writing it down.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So we'll make you a little theme tune. It's been really nice having you on the pod today.
Yeah, really cool.
Thanks so much for joining us.
I mean, as the last word, seeing as I've plugged having the world's
best single malt whiskey, which is called Sherry Cask Matured.
It was the English whiskey company with the Sherry Cask Matured, Pedro Jimenez. The other thing that I would like to say is anybody that is visiting a festival and comes to see us, we always have an exclusive that we only sell, only pour on that day. And we are currently doing a rye. And that's what I've just been finishing on. And do you know what? It is spectacular.
Amazing.
You need to do, you've always got good stuff on the stand. So the first time I ever saw you at Whiskey Festival was at Somerton in the wedding get up.
Are you going this year?
Yeah, so we'll see you there. There's always, always really good stuff on the English whiskey stand. One of my favourite whiskey expressions from the English whiskey distillery is the 11-year-old yellow label bourbon.
Yes.
It's always outstanding, whatever batch it is.
Yeah.
Always.
So we're on batch 4 still. We don't take that around with us very much now, to be honest with you.
Summer dram. Crack it out in the summer. Yeah, get the shorts out, yellow label burbs out.
Yeah, it's one of those, because we've brought on the festival exclusives, we've kind of had to drop one of the whiskies, and the 11-year-old seems to be the one we've dropped because we've now brought in the world's best sherry cask as well, matured. That obviously that goes centre forward now. So, but yeah, I'll make sure I bring some 11-year-olds.
Oh, it's okay. I've had a couple of bottles of it. Don't bring it for me. I mean, I'm just saying that it's one of my favourite whiskies that you guys do. That's
what still 65 quid, 11 years old, 46% ABV.
It's really good. Yeah. Yeah, it's excellent.
It's still an oldest English whiskey with an age statement.
I never got to try that 15-year-old one that you did, though. You know, the one that was priced at £250. I never got to try that.
It's 16-year-old.
Yeah, I never got to try that.
Well, 15, yeah.
Points to shelf. There, yeah. Someone points to shelf. I almost couldn't see it because of the giant cask.
Well, the 16 in the middle there, actually, so I haven't got one on the yeah. yet. Mm. I mean, the thing is, this is something that we did kind of get a little bit of flack over, that, you know, how do you price a 16 or a 15-year-old at nearly £300? The argument to that is, when other people produce a 3-year-old at £150 or £125, do the math.
The answer is very simple. Is you say, we only have this many bottles.
We're a tiny producer in the grand scheme of things.
When we can do a Tamdu and we can produce 22,000 bottles of 15-year-old whiskey, we'll put it out at 80 quid. Until then, we can't. We're really sorry. And that's what you say.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, the quarter cask you had at Kendall last year, the exclusive there, that was 14 years old. From a quarter cask.
Brian loved it. I really liked it, but I think that, I can't remember if we were in a whiskey embargo at the time or whatever, but it all depends on how much I spent at the time. Virgin Oak, for me, I do enjoy, but it's not my favourite of the casks.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So I'd be more like to spend my money on like just ex-bourbon, sherry refill, sherry. I tend to avoid, I don't avoid, but like, red wine casks aren't my go-to. Some of them I really like. Yeah. Most of them I miss. Mike loves red wine, but for me, I'm very careful about that. Same with Virgin Oak. So I really thought it was an excellent dram, but it was more about the experience of you explaining the difference in the glass and at the time.
Yeah.
Actually, my favourite off your stand, ironically enough, was the world's best. It was the sherry cask matured. That was my favourite whiskey on the stand that I tried when I came on that day.
Yeah, it is good. You know, we're very proud of it. Andrew and the team, you know, the team are very proud of it. And I will give a quick shout out to David, who was the distiller back then. You know, he laid this whiskey down. The team now have developed it and brought it out. What they've done, Chris, our distiller, you know, they're all doing an absolutely fantastic job.
Super stuff.
And I don't think any of them could be any more proud than Andrew and Katie are, our owners. So, you know, it's a real sort of proud moment. And especially if James had still been around, you know,
but
for him to have, if he'd have known this, then his foresight would have been perfect.
I remember when the signs went up to introduce the first single malt whiskey from England. I remember thinking at the time, that's bonkers, right? Like, I remember, you know, I would have been sort of mid-20s, you know, early 20s at the time. We talked about it at home. We were like, the first single malt whiskey in England. This is crazy, right?
Damn.
And just watching it, you know, develop and grow over the years. Because I lived in Norwich for years, Soren. Like, I lived in Norwich for like 8 years or something. I was like post-uni when you guys launched. Like, I remember it. I've been to the place loads of times. It's blossomed, hasn't it, right? So we hope to see you soon at a festival or something like that. It's been a real pleasure having the podcast. And if there's any outside chance of us coming to the distillery to record with you a country music video about English Whiskey Distillery, I'm being serious. We write songs. We'll make a country music video about the distillery. We'll get the old acoustics out. And
then we'll do a dance version.
Yeah.
And then we'll dance it up. We'll change the Tennessee Whiskey song and do it as a Norfolk song.
Yeah.
I've got a brand new cask of whiskey, and I'll give you.
We can get Combine Harvester in there somewhere, and Ovaltine.
100%.
definitely have you down at the distillery. Your team, you know, I'd love to come and do something, and the team are definitely.
Yeah, we're trying to get into sort of whiskey takeovers, aren't we, Mike?
Where
we do like sort of takeover days, and we were like sort of, but for us, we want to make music videos around spoof songs.
Yeah.
To do with distilleries. And we are going to do it. So watch this space.
Yeah.
It's happening.
Give us a shout and I'll make sure I'm down there when you come.
Decent.
Otherwise, you won't be in the video. You've got to be there. You've got to be there to be in it, haven't you?
I'll definitely be there.
Stuff. Well, thanks so much for coming again. We really appreciate it.
It's been really good. Thank you. Really, really lovely to have you on. Good to see you again. And just really appreciate it. We'll definitely do something down the line with you. But just to finish off from our usual things, follow us in all the usual places at honestormalt.com, at honestormalt on Instagram, Twitter, and everything else. Duncan's on at Whiskey Tip. I'm on at Whiskey Wings, and Soren is on. Remind me again,
OCD Whiskey?
No, it's now Soren at English _whiskey.
There we go. At English _whiskey. That's how you get Soren.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. So, yeah, give everyone a follow, and we will catch you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Duke Nook Whiskey.